I have finally, after this work of the past year, defined a little game which is called, I call it Guts Ball. See? And I say, in effect, look, when I was in the temple in India, whatever I thought, it turned out the guru knew. And as I told you last night, even the most horrible, innermost, intimate, frightening, scary thoughts, even the ones that after 5 years of analysis, you know, $30,000 later, I still hadn't fully, in their full flavor, shared with the analyst. Not because almost I didn't want to, but because the flavor was so rich I could never find the way to share those particularly, you know, particularly perverse fantasies or whatever they were. You know. More like posturings than a total. I mean, you can tell them the gross thing. You can say anything you want in an abstract enough way, and it has no effect. And it's when you get into the flavorings and the colorings that you get the affective component. And I said to him, I say to the person, when I was with my guru, I realized that he knew it all from inside. And he looked at me and he saw that place in me where I was behind all that. So he didn't get hooked on I am a neurotic, or I am a bad person, or I am a good person, or I am anything. He just saw me almost as light, and he could feel the merging of love and light with that being inside me, behind all that. And I said, just like the Sikhs, a religious order in India, say, once you realize God knows everything, you're free. That is, once you realize that it's all right, the whole model of original sin, in other words, once you've seen that you aren't the original sinner, you are free. Now, when my guru did this to me, and when I suddenly realized that there was another human being so deeply inside my own head that we were both looking at it from the same place, and with all that, here he was, totally accepting, I experienced this tremendous sense of freedom and exhilaration and well-being. And it changed my behavior, because then I found the truth was no longer too expensive. Truth was now an absolute prerequisite in the dance. Because if I wanted to be high with everybody, all I had to do was let them in. I didn't have to go around letting people in like the ancient mariner with the albatross around his neck, telling the story in a preoccupied way. But I had to be able to let another person in. And the guru was already in, and it was all right, so it was obviously all right. So now what I say to the person is, once that's one of the things that he did for me, maybe I can do that for you. So the simple rule of this game, if you'd like to play, I'll explain the rules of the game, but you better only play if you want to play, because you can only play if you want to play anyway. Even if you make believe you want to play, that won't be good enough. So the rules of the game are this. Anything you can think, and you might all try this on for size, it's kind of fun just to look inside. Anything you can think, feel, desire, fear, anything you can bring to your mind about any of these that you have difficulty, are embarrassed, are made uncomfortable by sharing with me, share it with me. It's a simple rule of the game. It's, in other words, I'm saying to you, in Hermann Hesse's Magic Theater, any door you've got closed, open. And let's get on with it. You and I are sharing this thing. We're going to get on. And I say, because I'm not my guru. I can't go into your head because I choose to go into your head. I can only go into your head if you invite me into your head, and you can only invite me into your head if there's no way in which I'm him. And every thought you have that you've got to keep from me keeps me him. And finally, when there's nothing in your head that you can't share with me, then we're us. That's like you've been out on a hard day and you go home and you put your feet up and you throw your wallet on the table and you relax and you're home and there's us. And us knows all the foibles and etc. So a person looks at me and they say, I say, you only play if you want to play. And they, oh yeah, I want to play. Now I'm sitting looking between their eyebrows doing Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And they look at me and they say, I want to stick my penis up your nose. And that's for openness. So I sit there doing Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om. And it's just as if he had opened his mouth and gone, ah, blah, 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 right? In other words, I don't have a theory going. When I was a Freudian, somebody would say, I've been thinking about my mother's vagina, you know, and I write down mother's vagina, you know, and I say, see, and pretty soon I've got the patient reinforced so that every time I pick up my pencil, he gets a flash and he's winning my attention and love. Pretty soon he's talking about his mother's vagina, 50 minutes of the hour, see. And then I think, ah, we're getting someplace, see. But now, it is literally true. There is nothing he can say to me that makes any difference at all. I couldn't care less what he says. He says to me, then he looks and away, and you know, and I say, you can look at me, it's all right, here we are. I say, right, you want to do that, and here we are. And I'm doing Om Mani Padme Hum. And then he says, gee, he says, after that one, see, he feels so good. He says, you look like Buddha. See, there's light coming out of your head, and you're so beautiful. See, and inside me goes a little wave of, see, maybe I am. Maybe I'm a Buddha, you know. Like, see? And inside goes, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani. I mean, Om Mani Padme Hum is watching him say that and me do my trip, and it's just watching it all, and I'm just sitting there with the eyes on the light, saying, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme, just watching transference, counter-transference, all of it go under the bridge. It's all just going. I couldn't care less. And he says, you know, your face just changed. You look like a lecherous, evil drool coming out of your mouth and fire, and I'm getting nauseous, you know. And he's going through the whole thing, and I'm just saying, oh, money, pay me, oh, money. Now, what's interesting is that I'm using this as a device for centering on myself. I'm working on myself. That's all I can do. So all I'm doing is working on myself, which is my instructions always to people who are therapists who ask me, what do you do about therapy? I say, work on yourself. See? Because your, quote, patients will be as free as you are. And that's why I come back to the statement that it is as high as the therapist is. And that, now, the only other thing I would say in response to your question is that each particular therapeutic school is related to one particular type of distribution of energy in the system, or prana. For example, if you think in terms of chakras or energy centers in the body or connected with the body, there is first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, which you call the Muladhara, Svadhisthana, Manipura, Anahata, Vishuddha, Ajna, and Sahasrara. First one's the bottom of the spine, the second is sort of below the navel, the third is at the navel, the fourth is in the heart region, the fifth is at the throat, the sixth is between the eyebrows, the seventh is on the top of the head. These don't necessarily have any physiological correlates. They're just psychic localizations of psychic energy, let's put it that way, in this Hindu system, the Sanskrit Hindu system I'm talking about. Now, the first, you can see an individual, instead of doing an MMPI on them, or a Rorschach, you could also do a chakra chart, just like you could do an astrological chart. And these all tell you certain things. An astrological chart is like an MMPI one level back in abstraction. See? Well, in the same way, a chakra chart tells in a way where the energy is fixed or localized in a person, where it's stuck.